through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Sour Tom, Jake, and Stacy is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Before we do around the NFL, I probably have over-teased this today. I apologize for that. The Mariner who changed his name. Shed Long, the artist formerly known as Shed Long, is now known as Shed Long Jr.
The first time I heard this, my immediate thought was, oh, good for him, because I just automatically thought he had a kid. But that's not how that works.
That means he's someone's kid.
I figured that out. But my first thought was, oh, congrats.
Or either that or his kid plays for the team.
Yeah, exactly.
So they could differentiate between the two. You have this infant out there.
Right. They said the Griffies would be the last duo.
Until now.
Nope, not that. So if you go out this year and you're going to buy a Shed Long jersey, or if you've already bought
one.
You
better write Junior on it.
Yeah, you need to go get another one, or you need to take a little...
A little permanent marker.
Well, funny thing, I was actually listening to the Hot Stove at 7 o'clock yesterday and hearing that interview. And the funny thing was is that when he was saying that he's going to be referred to as Shed Long Jr. now, and they asked him, they're like, oh, okay, well, is that how we address you now? And he's like, he had to think about it for a second. Like, well, yeah, I mean, I guess. I mean, it's going to be on the program. It's going to be on my jersey. It's going to be – so, yeah, I mean, Shed Long Jr. So – it's funny that even to him, it's still very new,
but they're not going
to. He's got to get used to it.
What do you mean? What did they mean when they address him? Like when they call him? Like
when they bring him on the show? Hey, it's Shed Long or Shed Long Junior.
Because if they see him like on the field, you're not going to call somebody by their full name. I don't say, hey, Jake Heaps, how you doing? You call him just by your first name.
But on the
hey, Stacy Joe Ross,
hello.
But when you announce him, it's it's Ken Griffey Junior. You know,
yeah. When you announce him,
yeah.
When you bring him in,
yeah.
All right. Let's go around the NFL. I want to start with a weird one.
Okay.
Stacey, you're into true crime documentaries?
Yeah.
Aaron Hernandez he doesn't have a documentary. There's a documentary about him.
Filmed at the Toronto Film Festival.
Yeah. It's on Netflix right now.
Have you
watched any of this yet?
No, but I just noticed it the other day when I went on to watch The Circle. Caller.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought to myself, add to my watch list right now.
Yeah, I forgot that was, I knew it was coming, but I didn't know exactly what the date was. And I started seeing all these texts or these tweets about it. And so, yeah, that's definitely going to be a must watch.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
You don't want to watch it?
No, I find that.
I understand why someone wouldn't.
Well, you don't know my reason.
Okay, well, what's your reason?
I would watch something like that. Like Ted Bundy, for example, I would watch a Ted Bundy documentary because it happened before my time.
Mm.
With Aaron Hernandez, I was sitting in that control room there when that police chase was going on.
Yeah, yeah.
Like anything that I lived through, I don't really need to go back and watch a documentary on.
That's fair.
Like if they did, we were just talking about Jerry Sandusky a minute ago.
Yeah.
If they do a 30 for 30, they haven't done a 30 for 30.
They have one called Happy Valley. Is that about it? Or am I thinking of something else?
If that's a documentary. Oh, well, there was that movie with Pacino where he was Joe Paterno. I don't need to watch that. I just don't need to see something relived that I already know all the awful details of.
Yeah. I guess in this case, you're going to probably learn more details and different things that you didn't know about this whole situation. I mean, we knew the headlines, but this is going to be a little bit deeper into what was going on. And yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to kind of watch that and see how this whole thing deteriorated for Aaron Hernandez.
I think that's why it's interesting, because you watch and it's not, this is a bad person and I'm watching it. You watch and you say, how did someone get here? Right?
I feel like I already know.
Like, you're not born a bad person. Like, how did you? Well, I mean, maybe I don't know as much.
Some people are born bad seeds.
Some people are just bad apples.
Larry Fitzgerald is coming back for a 17th season, specifically to torture the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not good for Seattle Seahawks fans, but ultimately, I'm just glad to see Larry Fitzgerald still playing. I love watching that guy play. He's a class act. He is a hard-nosed, tough football player, and he's just a good player to have playing in this league. And so for the Arizona Cardinals and for Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray, I think it's a huge boost knowing that you don't have to replace Larry Fitzgerald right away on that offense. I mean, that would be a huge void for them because, you know, look, Kenyon Drake was the playmaker for their offense at the end of the season, but Larry Fitzgerald is just as solid as they come.
He's one of the, well, can I say few players? I don't know. When he's gotten to the playoffs, which is unfortunately for him, been pretty rare in his career, he has elevated. For any of you out there who don't believe in the concept of clutch, watch any of Larry Fitzgerald's postseason games. He has elevated big time. He did it in 08. He did it in, what was it, 2014 or 15?
Against the Packers.
Against Green Bay. Yeah. He took over that game at the end. That's what he does. He takes games over in the biggest moments. He is a phenomenal player, definitely a Hall of Fame.
And he's right. He's nipping on the heels of Jerry Rice in a couple categories as well. So there's definitely incentive for him to come back and keep playing.
To break all-time records, you mean?
Uh-huh. He's only, I think, 1,300 yards behind Rice for yardage all-time.
So that'll only take two more decent years he could get there.
Yeah, or one really
or
good
one
year.
One ridiculously
yeah,
good year.
Yeah, one Michael Thomas-esque year.
You said 1,300?
Yeah.
He had 800-something last year.
Yeah, I was going to say he could get there, but... Yeah. Conversely, Panthers linebacker Luke Kuechly retired at age 28, so that's a shortened career.
Look at
just
your
eight
use
years.
Of conversely.
You switch it.
Conversely. I liked it. Yeah, you flipped it on its head.
You flipped it on its head.
There you go.
Yeah,
what is happening?
Nothing. That's what you missed yesterday.
Yeah, you did. We both were being Liza Minnelli.
Luke Kuechly is done, and we can't say we blame him because one concussion issue after another, those things take their toll. Here's him with SportsCenter yesterday.
You know, there's only one way to play this game since I was a little kid is to play fast and play physical and play strong. And at this point, I don't know if I'm able to do that anymore. And that's the part that is the most difficult is I still want to play, but I don't think it's the right decision. So I thought about it for a long time, and I think now is an opportunity for me to step away with what's going on here. I think we've got a really good linebacker room. I think Shaq and those guys are going to step and do a tremendous job.
Yeah, good luck to those guys. Hey, by the way, speaking of crying, did I tell you guys that on Friday, I went home and cried for like 45 minutes?
Why?
What? Why?
Why? Are you gonna think less of me, Jacob?
No, not at all. Why? I just want to know why.
He's concerned.
Are you?
What happened?
Well... At about 1:30 on our show last Friday, as many of you might remember, I announced on the show that Neil Peart, the drummer from Rush, died.
Yes.
And I'm telling you right now, ask Bob Stelton about this. When celebrities die, when they pass away, I don't get emotional in the least, okay? Even the guys that I like. But when I got home that day, I was backing into my carport, and this one line from this one song came on. The line was, "Suddenly you were gone from all the lives you left your mark upon." And I just lost it in my car. Like, I just started, like, not just crying. I was bawling. I got into my house and I was like, oh my God, this is so sad. Like, it was ridiculous. I wasn't going to tell anybody about it, but I guess
now
I
you decided to tell everybody
tell
about
everybody.
It.
Yeah. Now that Luke Kuechly's crying, I can cry too, right?
Everyone can cry.
Of
everybody
course.
Can cry.
Let's all cry.
You know, impactful things are emotional,
I felt,
right?
Yeah, I felt you. So. I really felt like I had lost a friend, is what it was. Like in that moment, I was realizing what this guy, what his music meant to me, you know, 25 years ago, etc. But man, grown men crying.
Yeah, well, I mean, Luke Kuechly, you can. Yeah, I think for him. And a lot of football players that have had successful long careers in the league, the finality of walking away from the game, I mean, the thing that's been a part of their lives for so long. And
what was that like for you? Are you going to cry?
Yeah, I don't want to cry.
I don't want to make you cry
on
now.
On the radio. But yeah, it's extremely hard. There's so many aspects that you miss about playing and on the field, off the field. I mean, it's special. And so, you know, for those reasons, you know, you can feel that from Luke Kuechly and you can empathize with him in a deep way, just like you were about Neil Peart.
I think one thing I always try to give more credit to when it comes to athletes that have to step away from the game is It's not a job they started 4 years ago. It's something you've been doing your whole life since you were a kid. It's part of your identity. It's what you spent summers doing and going away to football camps and going with your teammates and playing all through school. And I mean, imagine doing something since you were 6 or 7 years old.
Like listening to Rush.
And it's part of your identity. And then you have to just not do it anymore. And you're like, what else do I love? I mean, I have to change part of myself a little bit.
Hey, speaking of making me cry, the Giants are interviewing Jason Garrett for their offensive coordinator position.
What a transition! Are you so happy, Tom?
Why
not?
Why are the football gods forsaking me?
They are getting the Giants are innovating. They're looking for new and young minds. And
you know the report,
Jason Garrett, right there.
The report I saw said that Joe Judge and Jason Garrett would meet to see how they get along. And I'm just praying for like a fist fight. I hope like Joe Judge just gets up and says, get out of my office. I don't want any part of this guy. I know that as an offensive coordinator, when he was with the Cowboys before he was actually the head coach, he was somewhat successful there. But please, he's just a guy I don't like. I don't like him. I don't like his play calling. I don't like anything about the last 10 years for the Cowboys.
You want to know what's hard about that, Tom, is that it may end up being the case that Jason Garrett is not the offense coordinator, but that side of it of Joe Judge and Jason Garrett not liking each other is not going to happen because they're very similar.
What if you just hear the way that they talk,
the way that they approach this?
Oh, I don't think so.
Jason Garrett's very much.
I don't think the way that they talk is similar at all.
He's very serious.
No.
Jason Garrett.
They're both serious, but that's a broad term.
I think you need to just admit that they are the same person.
That they're the same person?
I want them to become best friends, and I want him to talk about Jason Garrett at every single press conference. And he's going to be like, enough about this game. I have to tell you what Jason and I did the other day. Oh, my God, it was so funny.
It's going to make Tom's.
Daniel Jones made some good passes, but let me tell you about Jason
Garrett. Listen. Okay, so we went bowling.
Good Lord. It's going to happen, too.
Probably.
Absolutely.
It's absolutely. It wouldn't be reported like that if it weren't going to happen. Paul Tagliabue and Steve Sable named to the Hall of Fame, joining Bill Cowher and Jimmy Johnson. Did you guys see Jimmy Johnson? They announced his induction into the Hall of Fame while he was standing in the Fox studio, and he just lost it. Another great man
crying.
It
was special.
See, Stacey cried, too. She's a wimp.
I teared up just a little bit. I'm not a wimp. I'm a bully, if anything.
You're both.
It was special. And I think for those moments, it's very cool to see that happen. And honestly, I wish that we got to see as fans, get to see those individuals like that receive the Hall of Fame nomination.
I'd watch that show.
That way. I mean, it would be really cool. And I'm sure there'd be a lot of touching moments. But honestly, Steve Sable, you talk about football being a part of your life. Steve Sable made football a part of a lot of people's lives and made it impactful and learning the history of the game and making it fun and cool and exciting to get the behind the scenes in terms of what he did with NFL films.
Oh my goodness.
It's one of those people that you just, to me, I don't know how this didn't happen sooner with Sable. I mean, he is such an integral part of making the NFL what it is today that, I mean, this should have been done a while ago.
The history of the game.
Absolutely.
I mean, I remember when they used to Curtis, do they still churn out those documentaries for every team every year?
God, those were the best to watch, especially during the summer.
Oh, my God. They could take the 2004 Cleveland Browns. I don't know anything
about
it.
Make them look like a Super Bowl champ.
Right. By the end of it, it's like, but the Cleveland Browns have a lot of hope for next year. I mean, it was...
Cut to a shot of Kelly Holcomb throwing a pick six.
Exactly. They did such a great job with those. They still do. Steve Sable, very deserving of that. I always said, like, in the sports media business, if ever I decided to leave, like, doing talk radio or whatever, if I could get a job at NFL Films, like, that's a job I would be very interested in.
You'd be good at, you and Curtis would both be good at that kind of thing.
Imagine their archives.
Oh, man, incredible. You guys would just be sitting there. You'd probably get fired because you'd just be sitting there trying to go through all the archive film.
Totally worth it.
And quizzing each other on all these players that
you've
watched.
Yeah, that's what people would be tired of. They'd be like, Tom, stop asking me what happened in 1975.
Tom, you're overqualified for this job.
Go away. No one wants to go to trivia again.
Curtis and I would work in the warehouse with the forklift bringing the box, making copies of all the tapes. And good for Paul Tagliabue. Good commissioner. Let's see. What? By the way, I see people complaining, Seahawks fans, about the fact that Bill Cowher is in the Hall of Fame over Mike Holmgren. Is Is Mike Holmgren that much more qualified than Cowher to be in the Hall of Fame? They both won one Super Bowl. They both lost. Well, Holmgren's 1-2.
Cowher lost the 1-95.
He's 1-1.
Yeah.
And they both won a ton of games. What's the complaint?
Well, just that it's not Mike Holmgren, and it's fan bias, Tom.
Yeah, but
they want Mike Holmgren instead of Bill Cowher.
Do you guys still look at Holmgren the same way you did around here? I mean, before Pete Carroll.
Yeah, I do. I mean, because here's the thing: is that it's not just the Seahawks' history; it is Green Bay and Seahawks. I mean, to me, Pete Carroll has overtaken Mike Holmgren and Chuck Knox as the guys that are you know, revered in this town in terms of the head coaching, you know.
He's the greatest Seahawks coach there's ever been.
Absolutely.
Period.
I still look at it and think all the things that Mike Holmgren accomplished and also the influence of Mike Holmgren on this league, his coaching tree in particular. So, yeah, I mean, he's had a tremendous impact, and I will
I just don't know
hold.
That makes him a Hall of Famer. In fact, I'll give you one better. I don't think Cowher or Jimmy Johnson are Hall of Famers. Jimmy Johnson won two Super Bowls with the Dallas Cowboys. Switzer won the other one and then didn't really do anything with the Dolphins. He made the playoffs a couple of times.
That's why I think Mike Holmgren, he's at least had more of an impact on this league in terms of his coaching tree, in terms of his philosophy and all that. I mean, you're looking at Mariucci. You're looking at Andy Reid, John Gruden. I mean, there are Doug Peterson. I mean, there are so many guys from his lineage of his time in Green Bay and Seattle that ended up having an impact on this league.
But, Jake, the Hall of Fame to me is about what did you accomplish? Wins, losses, Super Bowls, playoff appearances, etc. You've either got the numbers or you don't. Holmgren's right there, I'll give you that. Cowher's right there. I think Jimmy Johnson's a little behind those guys, actually, even though he's got another Super Bowl than both of them. But,
I think he's more than just eh.
He's eh.
He's more than that, for sure.
How does Tua project? I'm only going to call him Tua. I'm not going to say his whole name.
Tua Tagovailoa.
Tagovailoa?
Yep.
Tua. How does he project as an NFL quarterback?
I think you look at him and he's got elite level traits in terms of accuracy, anticipation, leadership is off the charts. I mean, Nick Saban and everybody in that Alabama program said that Tua is one of the most impactful players that's ever, you know, donned a Alabama jersey. So he is very much revered to that school. And I think for him, all of his talents translate very well to the NFL. The thing that I am nervous about with him is injury history. He's coming off a hip injury that is one not to be taken lightly, and he's also been injured multiple times during his time at Alabama in his three-year career. So those are things that you have to factor in, but I still believe he's going to be a top 15 pick, if not a top 10 pick.
The assumption is, though, that Burrow's going the first QB off the board.
That he is basically a lock to the Cincinnati Bengals.
It's between him and Chase Young.
Yeah, but I
think it's Joe Burrow. Joe
Burrow, if the Bengals don't pick him, I will be shocked. Shocked.
Do we have a good lefty quarterback in the league right now?
No.
No. I don't think there are any.
Are there any, period?
I think Kellen Moore was like the last one.
Yeah, obsolete in the NFL currently.
Breed.
Well, we got one coming back.
Who? Who's coming back?
What are you saying?
What do you mean?
You said
now
there's one
coming
back.
Well, not coming back.
Save.
But
joining the NFL.
Coming.
Tua.
Tua, yeah.
Oh, okay.
There we go.
Was that so hard?
Yeah,
I
didn't know where you were
going with that.
Coming back.
Sorry. I thought you meant someone retired.
I meant coming back to the league.
Kellen Moore is coming back.
But then you guys made me self-conscious. I'm like, wait, is Tua not left-handed?
No, he is. He's
very left-handed. Oh.
Huskies have a Heward that's left-handed coming down the pipeline.
That's right.
What do you mean he's coming down the pipeline?
This is What's on Tap with Tom, Jake, and Stacey. So, folks, what's on tap?
We didn't have a producer today. How about that? But on our show sheet, you won't believe what was written. I think only maybe Curtis might enjoy this one. Number 18, Seton Hall, taking on number 5, Butler tonight.
Big East Hoops?
Biggie, yeah. 3:30 on FS1. Is Butler really number 5?
They are.
Good Lord. But none of us will be watching that.
It's been a wild college basketball season. Anybody who's been in the top five this year is almost immediately lost.
Right.
So, Duke last night, they lost to Clemson.
It'll be another one of those years where nobody knows who to pick in the bracket or in the March Madness, and it won't really matter.
So is it at a point where there's just not a true elite program right now, like one that is separated from everybody else in college basketball?
Well, there's always blue bloods, I mean, your handful, but at the same time, I mean, Duke isn't its normal Duke dominant squad. They don't have Zion Williamson either.
That's true. Right? I mean, they suffered a bad loss to Clemson.
Yeah, when you lack a dominant player, that's what happens, because that's what college basketball is all about, ultimately. One thing we're going to be tracking, though, not just tonight, but for the rest of the offseason, the health of one Will Dissly, who I have a question about next.
He's killing it. He's killing the rehab. Willie's doing great. He's spending some time down in L.A., to get right, and he's really fired up about the people he's working with and the progress that he's making. He's been around a lot. He'll get it done. Yeah, he will get it done. There's no question he will. But it's a long process, though. It's going to be some tough work for him.
We talk about this team taking a step forward next year or this year. How much will Uncle Will factor into that? 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
This hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacy is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. We have some concerns right now over the weather here.
Could someone text in and let us know if it's sticking?
Well, hold on a second. I don't want anybody who's driving.
You're right.
But if you're standing like on your veranda or something like that, and you're looking outside,
yes,
and you can text us maybe to let us know what the deal is out there, because from our vantage point over here, it looks like it's a blizzard out there.
Yeah, in Seattle right now, is it sticking to the roads or not? Because it looks like it's been a blizzard out there for the past hour or so.
It's hard because we can't see the road. We just see the second floor.
Right. I'm not worried about it personally. I like driving in the snow.
What?
Yeah.
No.
Kind of fun.
If you think almost dying is fun.
Well, no. You got to be careful. You got to have all-wheel drive. You just be careful. And, you know, when you're coming to a stop sign or stoplight, you brake way, way, way ahead of time.
I don't like it.
Okay. Well, you know what, though? You're going up hills.
Yes.
To where you go. Mm-hmm. So that's always... You probably shouldn't be here.
I'll see you guys later.
Yeah, just leave. I'm just going across the bridge. It's flat. Doesn't matter. All right. We were talking at the top of the show about the Seahawks and whether or not they had taken a step forward this year. I think we all agreed at the end of 2018 that they had, right? 10-6 in a year where a lot of us thought it was going to be 7-9, 8-8.
Especially the year before they hadn't made the playoffs. Yeah. It's hard not to say they took a step forward.
They made the playoffs. It was fine. I think that they overachieved this year, given that a huge part of their offense was not available for the last three games of the season, right? And they even won a playoff game without Chris Carson.
True. And as our eye told us, right, as we were watching, that their defense just wasn't up to par, right? That this team was overcoming a lot of adversity and overcoming themselves and winning games, despite the fact that talent-wise, they did not have enough blue-chip talent, and they were... Again, we were sitting here, point differential. We couldn't figure it out, and how this team was winning despite all these other things that would tell us that this team is a 500 team at best or below that.
When you win that way, with that low point differential, the supposition is that it's luck, or maybe that it's just one player, or it's the way they play. Because Pete Carroll says, well, we're going to forsake the first half, and then in the second half, we're going to have Russell come out and win by 3 or 4 or 5 or whatever it is. It's really difficult to tell if they've taken a step forward this year. All the injuries, close wins. I know they got one game further in the playoffs, but when you look at not just what they are on paper, but how they played, it's tough to tell.
You know what I'll say? I think that I don't know if I can count this as a step forward, but I think they moved forward as an offense, even just with the development of DK Metcalf. I think the fact that Chris Carson, and I know that you have to worry about his injury history moving forward, not that he didn't play through 15 games this year, but Kyle, I disagree with Kyle on this one, but Kyle has rightfully pointed out that he hasn't finished a full season yet. But he had another 1,000-plus yard season. You had DK Metcalf coming in. I think the trajectory for the offense is up. You need to make some smart moves with your offensive line, and you do, I think, need to cater a bit more to Russell Wilson. But so is that a step forward? I'm counting it as one, but I see what you're saying.
You also look at that. You look at the running back position and where they ended up, Rashad Penny, Chris Carson, and what the, where that put you. That put you in a position where you had to go to Marshawn Lynch off the street, you know, 14-month hiatus and sign him to help out with the running back depth, right? So that's a situation that you have to, you know, you have to pay attention to. Also, your tight end position. I mean, let's think about that. Ed Dixon didn't come through for you. Will Dissly to me, and I said it at the beginning of the season, the way that he was playing, he is a legitimate top 10 tight end in this league when healthy. And he has not been able to do that in his two seasons. And so for me, as much as I love Will Dissly and you want to have that guy on your roster and you're going to, when healthy, play him and he's going to be a big part of your offense, you have to plan around that. So Jacob Hollister did a great job filling in, but he's not a run blocker for you. He's more of a pass catching threat. I think he's a nice piece. I think Will Dissly, Jacob Hollister, those are good pieces to have in your tight end room, but you got to add some consistency in terms of adding a guy that you know is going to be there for you all season long.
Even if they took another step forward this year, if we come to that conclusion or they come to that conclusion, you're still going to want to improve anyway. We're not saying, well, they improve, just, you know, ride it off into
the sunset.
But
it's whether or not the trajectory is going up. Have you leveled out? Are you moving toward improving once again, getting even further in the playoffs next year? I think it's hard because it feels like because the defense took a step back and the offense took a step forward, I think, that they evened out somehow. And I don't know whether or not I agree with that idea. I kind of do and I kind of don't. I look at the defense. So I looked at the rushing yards and passing yards allowed by the defense going back to 2014. Passing yards, 2018 and 2019, were the only time in the last 5 years that they were above the league average in yards allowed.
So meaning that they were giving up more than the average.
They were giving up more than the average team.
Yeah.
That they were in the bottom half of the league.
And they were, over the last two seasons, in 2018, they were about middle of the road, 15 to 18 in every defensive statistical category. In 19, they dropped to the bottom of the league in every major statistical category. And when you go into the deeper analytics of where the defense was, it is scary. It is scary. And they took a major step backwards.
I can't believe I'm about to say this, but the stats that you guys just rattled off there, I think that those stats are more useful in determining the progress from 18 to 19 then say, oh, well, they got one round further in the playoffs. There's a lot of different factors that could have contributed to that. I mean,
that's fair.
I mean, let's just say it came down to like Philadelphia fumbling the ball, and that was what got them into the next round. I mean, you can't conclude that because of that they've improved. I mean, all these other categories that we're talking about, they're last in this or they're near the bottom. That tells me that at least in a lot of statistical categories, a lot of areas of the team, they did take a step back. Offensively, I agree.
Offensively, they took a step forward.
The addition of DK Metcalf on its own should tell you that they took a step forward. On top of the fact
that
Chris
yards
Carson
per game.
Was better and Russell was better and all that stuff too. The Dissly question is strange, though, because had he been there the whole year, I mean, we talk about war in baseball. Right, wins above a replacement. Like, would Will Dissly have given them another win? Would he have gotten them to the number one seed as opposed to the five? It's impossible to say one way or the other.
Potentially, but the reality is, though, is that to me, the offense, when you talk about your defense being in the position that it was, at some point that's going to come back and haunt you. And it clearly was the case against Green Bay that they could not stop Green Bay's offense when they really needed to. And that's the reality of the situation, that even though that offense would have been better with Will Dissly on the field, I don't question that, and you have a combination of Will Dissly and Jacob Hollister, I love that. But your defense is still the thing that really is holding you back, and so I think that they have to make improvements. They have to find a way to make this offense elite around Russell Wilson to get even better than what this group already was, a top 10 offense, in this league. But you also defensively, you've got to improve in a ton of different areas, and you've got to find upper level starting talent, more blue chip talent across this defense where they are. You've got team speed, you've got physicality, you've got all of the swagger and the attitude that you need to have with a great defense. And so they're, I think that this team is, when you talk about improving, I think that they're on their way to be a Super Bowl contending team. They've got enough pieces in place, but they have to have one heck of an offseason and make the right moves to get them get themselves there. It is not an automatic. It is not a given. This is not 2012 where you're looking at this roster and everything is basically set because your young talent that you've drafted is there performing already and they just need one or two. This is multiple pieces.
Why don't you say that to Pete Carroll's face, man?
I will.
This is not 2012, Pete.
I would say all those things. I mean, it's just the truth. It's the truth, and I think that he knows that as well.
Do the Seahawks have a tight end curse? Zach Miller, Jimmy Graham, Will Disley. I mean, these are all really good tight ends.
They are.
That end up getting hurt.
Yeah. Zach Miller. Did Zach Miller play the entire 2013 season or
I don't
or
know
no?
if he did or not. I know he made it through 2012.
Okay.
I think he got hurt in 2013.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, he was a great tight end.
He really
I really liked him a lot. And Will Disley has that same qualities and abilities that Zach Miller had, and I think even more dynamic as a pass catcher. But yeah, that's one of those guys that I look at and you say, okay, you can bank you're excited about those guys, but you cannot bank on them being your starter going into next year because of the injury history.
This hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacey brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. We sum it up next, 710 ESPN Seattle.
The wait is over.
They're going to wave him in.
It's time to sum it up with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Shot clock turned up.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports. Brought to you by Zone In CBD.
Step back.
I'm planning on writing something up for 710sports.com on this whole sign stealing thing for tomorrow. So I'll write it tonight. I think it'll be up tomorrow. But I should warn you that after I write, I usually feel enough catharsis where I'm not that upset anymore. So if there's anything that you want to like talk to me about,
what
right
if it
now,
does the opposite?
What if it gets me more upset?
Yeah, I think it might.
Well, if something else comes out about it that, you know, may make me that much more upset than, yeah, sure.
Is what's making you most upset the act itself or people's response to it?
It's both. I mean, it's a dishonest act that the people involved thought was okay, or at least some people involved thought was okay. And they probably based it all on the old saying that, A, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. And, you know, side stealing has been going on since the beginning of time. Look, sign stealing is some people call it gamesmanship, but it's at least a little dishonest. I don't care. If you're standing on second base, okay, and you can get the signs from the catcher and your eyeballs work that well and you can figure out a way to get the signs to the hitter, fine.
Because at that point also, you as the opposing player, if they're stealing your signs that easily – and being able
then
to do it, then
you should have to go and adjust your own.
Exactly.
But now when we're talking about technology, depending on how they do it, and we're talking about two teams that have won well over 100 games now and won two World Series.
And a coordinated effort between
yes.
a lot of people.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
That was devised by this one person, Alex Cora. That's essentially guaranteeing that you're successful. I've never been a major league hitter, but I have to imagine that would cut the level of difficulty in striking a baseball in half. I mean, unless it's just such a special pitch, unless it's Mariano Rivera's cut fastball where you knew what was coming every pitch, but you still couldn't hit it, nobody else has that pitch, okay? Nobody. So for them to be dishonest in the act and then dishonest after the fact, you know, by saying, oh, well, you know, we got a gag order on baseball because we don't want us to look bad. You know what? Maybe for once, Rob Manfred, you should let the bomb go off and let your sport look bad, because maybe that will get a little bit of faith from people like me back into it. Right now, I mean, depending on how this thing goes and how Rob Manfred handles it and how he handles a couple of other things going on in baseball, like, I have a very love-hate relationship with baseball right now. I grew up a baseball fan. I played baseball. But, man, the last 20 years or so of watching this game has disappointed me in every conceivable way. And I want the Mariners to be good and all that stuff. I know it probably doesn't help that they've not been a very good team. But, man, I mean, we talked the other day off air about what sport we think is going to be the first to die off.
It was a dark conversation.
It was. I mean, eventually,
well,
sports are going to die off for whatever reason. Everybody thinks it's football because of concussions, and maybe it will be. But believe me, lack of interest in baseball is a major problem. And this stuff doesn't help.
Yeah, it doesn't help. And the way that they handled this is going to be a huge determining factor if they can recapture and rebuild that relationship, an already fractured relationship with a national fan base. As we've talked about before, local media and local fan bases are still attached to their teams. Those are still doing well. But baseball being a national game and being America's game, I mean, that's pastime. I mean, that's not even close to what it is now. I mean, the NFL has clearly taken that over. And so what are they going to do to handle situations like this and move forward that are going to be a big part of it? And, Tom, I agree with you. Putting a gag order on the players, to me, it also ruins the opportunity to have Major League Baseball being talked about as well.
That's exactly right, because it's being talked about in the wrong way. The only time that anybody cares about baseball – And I'll count myself among the – is in the postseason. The postseason this year was great.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're learning that two out of the last three postseasons were frauds. Frauds.
Yeah.
I mean, they were great, but now I got to look back and say, oh, well, none of that was real.
I mean, it's disappointing. I mean, we talked about it, 2 days ago, about – we threw out that question. If the Mariners won the World mm-hmm. Series – you have this amazing experience. This town is electric.
For a team that's thirsting for it.
People are crying and emotional because of it, all of that. And then to find out that it's been tainted all along and that they've actually been cheating to get there, I mean, to me, that would be an absolute gut punch. And it would be so hard to forgive the organization and the teams for doing this.
This is a tough week in Houston.
It is. Well, I feel like part of it is sometimes baseball, with the exception of maybe the Patriots or like storied franchises in the NFL, it does do well with parody. And I think with baseball, sometimes it can feel like a rich get richer sport, especially for people who watch if their hometown is a losing team. And it feels like it's always kind of the same teams. And I know it's not, but I'm generalizing.
Sure.
It takes a long time to turn your system around and become good.
And think
sometimes
about
it feels like there are teams that always win and just have more money to spend on things.
And think about that. Who's the model franchise when it comes to turning around your team? Like, right, they tank for 3 years.
Right, the Astros.
The Houston Astros.
Exactly.
Everybody wants to be the next Astros.
Exactly. So I think that plays into – there's a lot of things that play into people who don't love baseball as much – why they might not love it as much. That isn't the only thing. But I think people like a feeling of fairness.
And you ask about Houston. I mean, Houston radio, all they're doing right now is excusing what has been going on. Oh, this is what happens in baseball. They're trying to explain away the situation because they don't want it to ruin or taint the World Series and success that they have had. And I understand that thought process. But let's be real. I mean, that is a huge problem. And to me, the only real penalty that actually makes sense and that matters is stripping the title, because then you're taking away from that fan base. You're taking it away from that organization, because
you're
years
telling
from
everybody
now,
else you better
if,
not do it.
If you're not, if you don't strip this title years from now, what are we really going to remember about the Houston Astros? We're going to remember the star players, Bregman, Springer, Altuve. This is going to be a blimp on the radar screen.
By the way, very quickly, they have to decide between talking about this in Houston or the 24-point lead that the Texans coughed up the other day.
I talk about this all day long.
Okay, if it were the Mariners cheating or the Seahawks coughing up a win in the playoffs or loss, what would we be talking about?
Mariners Seahawks. Cheating.
We would?
Yeah, I would. I think it's fascinating.
All right, we'll talk about it more tomorrow. 710 ESPN Seattle.